Part 2. Chapter 3. The Fish of Steel. We were pulled down a metal ladder, and before we had time to look around, we were shoved along a corridor and into a prison cell. Two men followed us in. One of them had a broad back and big muscles. The other one was taller, with cold, staring eyes. He looked like the one in charge. I explained to them who we were. I spoke in French, but they didn't reply. I tried speaking in English, German, and Italian, but they still didn't answer me. Perhaps actions speak louder than words, Ned said, and before I could stop him, he threw the broad-shouldered man to the floor and pinned him down. Careful, gentlemen, the tall man said. He spoke in French, so he had understood me after all. Don't make me angry. I know who you are. We aren't on land now, and I don't have to live by your laws. He was deadly serious. Nobody else had a submarine like this. He was all-powerful on the sea, safe to do whatever he wanted, and nobody could stop him. Professor Arana, he said, you're in my world now, and here you will stay until you die. What? Ned cried, ready to hit him. You mean we'll never see our friends and families again? You are prisoners of war, the tall man said. You're lucky I didn't let you drown. And now that you know the secret of my submarine, I cannot let you go. Ned raised a fist, but I held him back. Even if we could fight our way out of the cell, how would we escape the submarine without drowning? Who are you? I asked the tall man. My name is Captain Nemo, he said, and you are aboard the Nautilus, the most powerful ship in all the oceans. It was hard to believe that we were really prisoners. Before taking us to our cabins, Captain Nemo showed us around the ship. I could only think that he wanted to show it off. First, we went into a huge room that Nemo called the saloon. The walls were covered with shelves full of hundreds of books. Amongst these books you will find yours, Professor. Mysteries of the Underwater World, Nemo said calmly. I was strangely pleased to think that he had already heard of me. But that book is just the beginning, Nemo said. You will learn a lot more about the underwater world on board the Nautilus. Apart from books, there were many other treasures in the saloon. It was like being in a museum full of things that lived in the sea or were lost at sea. There were glass cases of fossils and shells and aquariums full of coral, seaweed and multicoloured fish. There were broken stone pillars from the lost city of Atlantis, bronze fittings from the Greek ships that attacked Troy, Viking helmets, pieces of Roman armour, and a dagger that had belonged to Christopher Columbus. This was the greatest kind of treasure for a scientist and a historian like myself. I could write another book on the study of these finds alone. But Ned was not interested in treasure like this. His eyes were on the chests of gold coins rescued from sunken Spanish galleons, and the piles of rubies and diamonds wrapped in a skull and crossbones pirate flag, brought up from the seabed of the Caribbean. Against one wall there was a large piano. Nemo played a few dramatic chords on it as we looked around. There was more science, history, and wealth in this one room than in all the museums and banks of Europe put together. I can tell you like the sea, Captain, Conseil said, half-joking. The sea is everything to me, Nemo said seriously. It's a pure and clean place. The sea does not belong to evil rulers. Here I am free. A few moments later, we passed an iron ladder. Ned asked what it was for. It leads to a small boat on the upper part of the Nautilus, Nemo said. There's a manhole from the Nautilus to an airtight compartment in the small boat. When the small boat is set loose, the airtight compartment lets us breathe until we get to the surface. Worth remembering, Ned whispered to me under his breath, for when we make our escape. I said nothing. After seeing the library of books and the treasures, I couldn't think of escape. I could only think of getting to look at them again. Nemo was showing us the engine room. My new technology gives my engines endless power, he explained. You saw the jets of water from my pumps that burst over the Abraham Lincoln. Of course, I said. We thought they were the blowholes of a whale. But how did you build the Nautilus without anybody knowing? Conseil asked. Each section was made in a different part of the world. They were then sent to a secret workshop where they were all put together, Nemo said. We returned to the saloon, and Nemo left us alone to get used to our new home. Well, Ned said, any ideas about how we are going to escape? I want to forget escaping for the time being, I answered. Forget about escaping, Ned said. Are you mad? This is my great chance, I said. I could write the best book of my life on this ship. Isn't your freedom worth more than a book? Ned asked. The professor is giving up his freedom for the greater good of science, Conseil said in my defence. Don't you understand, Ned, I said. I've got to see more of this underwater world. I need to learn about it. See? Ned scoffed. But we can't see anything in this steel box. A sliding noise interrupted him. Light burst into the saloon. Part of the wall opened to show a window that looked out under the surface of the sea. The water was lit up for a mile in all directions. Sea creatures of all kinds swam before me. There were mackerel, with blue bodies and silvery heads. Japanese salamanders, jellyfish with violet spots and serpents with sharp teeth. It was like looking into a giant fish tank. Well, now we can see what we want, Ned, I said. Yes, I can see that they're free and we're not, Ned said sourly, pointing at all the fish. I said nothing. I didn't want to admit it, but I admired Nemo. There was something in his steely determination that made me want to trust him. He loved the sea as I did, and I was happy to be a prisoner if I could learn more than any other scientist in the whole world.